It's a billionaire's world and we're just living in it. And in the world of Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg and Mark Andreessen, nothing is true and all is spectacle, says Jonathan Taplin, a writer, film producer and director emeritus of the Annenberg Innovation Lab at the University of Southern California. He believes these four billionaires are selling us a fantasy future where we can live to be 200, colonize Mars, spend all day in the metaverse with AI and robots doing our work, and that technology can fix everything. Jonathan argues that this fantasy future vision diverts our attention from real crises like climate change and income inequality in his book, which is called The End of Reality, How Four Billionaires Are Selling a Fantasy Future. And Jonathan Taplin joins me now. Hi.
Good to see you, Jesse.
Nice to chat to you. Can you connect the dots for us a bit in your career? You started as tour manager for Bob Dylan in 69. George Harrison's producer on the concert for Bangladesh, producer to Martin Scorsese for some of his early films, and now you're a university professor. You actually began sounding the warnings about tech barons more than 10 years ago. How did that transition happen, that journey?
Well, it came about from watching some musicians that I cared a lot about, like Levon Helm, who was the drummer for the band, the lead singer, have their incomes shrink radically at the turn of the millennium. As you can recall, there was a service called Napster that was brought forth, which essentially put every single tune in the world online for free. And so a guy like Levon, who had managed to make a decent living, not a great living, but, you know, more than $150,000 a year in record royalties, all of a sudden found himself having no income whatsoever. And it just so happened that he also had contracted throat cancer in 2000. And so he couldn't work, he couldn't sing, and he couldn't even pay his medical. And it just seemed to me extraordinarily unfair that these tech overlords were taking the money because they were putting advertising on this stuff, and the musicians were getting nothing. And so that began my kind of look at that. And I wrote a book in 2016 called Move Fast and Break Things, you know, really taking on how these companies like Amazon and Facebook and Google had cornered culture and undermined democracy. So the more I got into this, the more I realized that we had a kind of new oligarchy. And that is something that had not really existed in the United States since the turn of the 20th century. In other words, when we had what we called the robber barons, it was known as the Gilded Age in the 1890s. Morgan and Rockefeller and Carnegie and these incredibly wealthy men kind of controlled politics, controlled wealth, and, you know, immiserated workers. And so that's how it started. And you know, quite frankly, today, the four people you mentioned at the beginning are our new oligarchs. And their desire is not only to control all of media, but also to control a kind of new military digital industrial complex under the guise that we don't have to have, we can still control the world as the United States, as a global cop, but we don't have to have soldiers killed because we use killer robots, drones, and other weapons that these geniuses will invent to do our battle for us.
That's scary stuff. And even the quote that begins the book, I find pretty scary. It's from a Yale professor concerned about the erosion of democracy. It says, to abandon facts is to abandon freedom. If nothing is true, then all is spectacle. The biggest wallet pays for the most blinding lights. How do you see that playing out in the world in 2024?
Look, you have seen it in New Zealand. I was there 3 years ago, traveling around, and that had been in the wake of the Christchurch tragedy, where a man who had been basically propagandized on the web decided to kill a lot. And your prime minister was smart enough to figure out a way to at least slow down the disinformation that was coming out of social networks and try and get it under control. But we're headed into an election in the United States in a month and a half, in which there is no truth being put forth. I mean, Trump says Haitian immigrants are eating the cats and dogs of people in cities. You know, the notion that you could say anything you want and has no reference to the truth is just widely distributed here. And of course, whenever he posts something, Elon Musk reposts it to his 190 million users. You know, Musk, because he owns Twitter, and clearly, as I lay out in the book, was one of the worst financial transactions ever made. In other words, they bought it for $44 billion, and it's worth about $5 billion now.
Yeah.
You know, so he lost all his money. The banks that own the debt in it can't sell the debt. And and they don't want to write it off because they were taking a huge hit on their books. So they're having to hold on to this. But the point is that Musk did it because he wanted to control this social network. And so, for instance, at the Super Bowl last year, Musk was sitting with Rupert Murdoch and tweeted something. And Joe Biden had tweeted about the same issue, about the game and everything. And Musk recognized that Biden was getting more retweets than he was. And he was absolutely crazed about this. And so he left the game, went back, got on his jet, went back to his headquarters in San Francisco, and insisted that the engineers push everything that he posts to everybody on Twitter, whether they followed him or not, so that he could have this Mussolini-like megaphone to the whole world. You know, and unless you actively blocked Musk, you would get everything he had to say. And a lot of it is pure nonsense. He says that immigrants are coming in so they can vote in this election. Well, nobody has ever proven that, you know, an unregistered immigrant is allowed to vote anywhere.
I'm talking to Jonathan Taplin. If you've just joined us, his book is called The End of Reality, How Four Billionaires Are Selling a Fantasy Future. And central to the ideas of your book, Jonathan, is this idea of techno-determinism. Can you explain that concept to us?
Yeah. So the idea is that since the beginning of the commercial internet, so let's say the time when Google goes public in 2007. This idea of the internet was supposed to be this great democratizing force. And I'm old enough to have met a lot of the people that created the internet, people like Vince Cerf, and they really did believe that they were building a kind of new democracy. And they believed it so much that all the protocols that we use, HTTP, HTML, they invented and gave to the public for free. They don't get any royalties on it or anything. But once the internet got captured by commercial forces, then there was a kind of monopoly situation of which we have never seen since John D. Rockefeller had monopolized the oil business. So Google has 90% market share in search. Facebook has about 78% of all search traffic, that is between Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, all those things. So you would think that there would be government regulation, but because the technologists have kind of intimidated politicians to the extent that they think they know what they're doing and we, the public, should just follow their plan for the internet, and obviously it's coming to artificial intelligence in an exact same way. There can be no regulation because politicians don't know what they're doing, and we should just leave it to the billionaire overlords to determine what technology policy. And so there's never been any regulation of social networks, even though it's been proven by many people that teenage suicides, self-harm, all those were started skyrocketing as soon as Facebook got to 2 billion users. And so the notion of techno-determinism is, hey, shut up and just let us drive the car, like Mark Andreessen or Elon Musk. And look, it's coming in lots of other ways. Why do you think Elon Musk and Mark Andreessen and Peter Thiel are investing in Donald Trump's campaign? Because they figure that if he gets in, they will take over the military-industrial complex. They, you know, SpaceX will replace Boeing. Palantir will replace any other data company. Anduril, which is Mark Andreessen's drone manufacturing company, will replace Raytheon. And it's just a classic, old, good old robber baron thing, only in digital clothing.
What does the fight back look like, Jonathan? What does the rebellion look like?
Well, it takes two parts, one of which is in our country, we have a young woman who is chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan, who has sued Google, who has sued Facebook, and has sued Amazon to break them up. So that's the beginning of the fight. And the second part of the fight is personal stuff. Every single person I know who's built these tools, built these social media tools, does not let their child take their phone into their bedroom at night. They know how dangerous it is. And they know that a lot of the bullying, a lot of the bad stuff goes on in kids' bedrooms at night. And so, and in California, we just passed a law that was signed yesterday by the governor. It says nobody can have a phone on in school during the day. So that's the beginning of the fight. It's to restrict the usage of these harmful technologies and maybe to break up these companies and make them much smaller.
You've spent a lifetime in the arts. Do the what you refer to as the humanists, do they form part of the solution?
Well, you know, one of the problems, I'm in the midst of writing a new book, and one of the problems that's clearly surfaced is that there's no longer a counterculture, at least not in America. I don't know about New Zealand, but I grew up obviously working for Bob Dylan in the 60s, and that was what we called a counterculture, right? The times are changing, you know, blowing in the wind. It was an oppositional way in which the arts represented a move towards the ideals that Thomas Jefferson wrote about. All men are created equal, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, all of that. So now the mainstream culture is liberal, but it's liberal in the sense that Snoop Dogg will advertise for anybody in the world, you know, if as long as the check clears,
yeah,
he'll shill. And so everybody becomes an advertising person. Every young influencer wants to get advertising revenue. And so the arts is kind of left out in the cold here. And, you know, quite frankly, I would argue that the kind of nihilistic culture that has been bred by the television series from Sopranos to Mad Men to Breaking Bad to Succession has led us to believe that only horrible crooks can succeed in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual that, you know, Sopranos started in 2001, and by the time of 2015, why wouldn't people think, well, everything's screwed up. We need a gangster to run our country. And so we elect Donald Trump, you know, because he's a character out of The Sopranos. He's a classic mafia chieftain. So this is, you know, this kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you have a nihilistic culture, gangster rap, first-person shooter games. Everything is all die, die, die. And you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the same thing. Batman things. It's all, the world is going to hell, and some guy is going to save you from it. And that's essentially what Donald Trump's rap is. You know, the cities are a mess. Immigrants are pouring over the border. Crime is, I mean, you can't go out of your house to go get a slice of bread because there's too many criminals on the street. It's all nonsense, but it's working because people have been living in a culture of nihilism for 15 or 20 years.
That's so interesting. And yeah.
Got to get out of that. I'm not sure exactly how we get out of that, but certainly in our country, in this election, Vice President Harris is trying to paint a more optimistic picture of the future. It's not going to be just hellscape, which is what Trump is basically saying.
Yeah. Jonathan, before you go, can you take us back to a simpler time? We have to ask you about your time as a former tour manager for Bob Dylan. You were there in 1965 at that Newport Folk Festival when Dylan switched from acoustic to electric guitar. You even wrote a book that includes a detailed account of that day. Can I ask what your thoughts are about the upcoming film? It's called Complete Unknown, I think. Timothy Chalamet is Dylan, and it focuses on that concert.
Well, look, that was one of those breakpoints in civilization, you know, with, you know, the crack in the universe. Bob came to Newport. It was a folk festival. The folkies had a very clear idea of what Bob's role in the world was, which was to be a protest singer. And he shows up on stage with sunglasses and a black leather jacket and an orange shirt and, you know, high-heeled boots that he got in England, the Beatles. And what is going on here? Where's the blue work?
Yeah.
You know, where's the cowboy boots? You know, and it was like, it just didn't fit. And so the people booed. You know, and then when it was one of those really classic situations where the old is dying and the new cannot be born. You know, that's one of my theories of the interregnum, which is what I think we're living through right now. Is, and it doesn't come from me. It comes from an Italian philosopher named Gramsci. But the old is dying, the new cannot be born. In this interregnum, many morbid symptoms appear.
Huh.
And essentially what happens is when an old world is dying, and, you know, obviously Trump's Make America Great Again is the symbol of that, right? We want to go back to the 1950s where these women and gays and blacks aren't giving us shit and we're going to just... White guys are going, you know, that's the old is dying, and the new cannot be born is, well, Elon Musk's vision of the future that, you know, technology can solve every problem and everything, and all we have to do is let the AIs do all the work. Well, that's not a solution either. You know, what are people going to do for a living if the AI takes over everybody's job? So, you know, we're stuck in this kind of middle weird place. And, you know, Bob's appearance was a perfect metaphor for that at Newport. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the film. You know, I think Chalamet is a perfect person to play that skinny, real thin guy with a crazy hair, do. And it'll be interesting. You know, I mean, the band and Bob came to Australia and New Zealand briefly in late 65, I believe.
Yeah.
And they had the same problem with people wanting folk music there as they had in the United States. It didn't get any better.
I'd love to send people to The Magic Years, by the way, the book all about your rock and roll life. But I didn't realize that Dylan actually left the stage, sat on the stairs, and then someone had to sort of gee the crowd up to call him back on. He went back with an acoustic guitar.
Well, Johnny Cash handed him a guitar and said, go play him a song.
And he was just short of a harmonica.
Bob went up on stage and he said, does anyone have a D harmonica? and literally landed on stage and he picked up one and he sang, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, which was the perfect kiss-off song to the folkies.
Yeah, wow. Hey, what's your connection to New Zealand? It's nice to hear that you've been out here before.
Well, you know, what I'm trying to think about is the role that the counterculture has played in the history of America. And it's a long history. You know, it really starts with Thomas Jefferson, who was an artist, a musician, an inventor. And it goes on to Thoreau and Emerson and the Transcendentalists and Mark Twain and Thomas Edison. And, you know, my theory is that, you know, the people who believe in military power talk about the word American exceptionalism. But quite frankly, the American military has not been exceptional for a long time. You know, they've lost every war they've fought since Vietnam, and one could even argue that the Korean War was not a victory either. But artists have been exceptional. American exceptionalism is its painters, its musicians, its writers, its filmmakers.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, as I write in this book, that's what brought the Berlin Wall down. Uh-huh. I was there in Germany working with Wim Wenders before I spent 6 months in the Australian outback on a movie called Until the End of the World. And we went over to East Germany to film scenes for the thing. And we would go there and we'd finish work every day. And when we come out, we'd go into the cafeteria. And there were all these East German film workers. This was early 1989. So in 7 months, the wall would have come down. And they were all watching MTV. You know, that's what they wanted to be. They wanted to be on the other side of the wall. They were already there emotionally. You know, they wanted the freedom. You know, in the Magic Years, I talked about a famous scene where David Bowie does a concert in Berlin and Vladimir Putin is a low-level, you know, KGB guy in Berlin, and he fucking flips out because Bowie sets up the stage right next to the wall with speakers pointed into East Germany.
Gosh.
And you know, 40,000 kids, East German kids, showed up. They couldn't see Bowie, but they could hear the music.
Wow.
And they were on the other side of the wall. And you know, Putin went crazy and tried to cut the wires and stop it all and chew all the people away. So, you know, it's very clear that culture is the great weapon. You know, there's a great business analyst who said, culture eats strategy for breakfast every day.
Yeah.
And that's what the book is about.
Fantastic. That film, Until the End of the World, featured Sam Neill, by the way. You didn't get an invite to his vineyard in central Otago last time you were here to drink a Pinot Noir with him.
I love Sam. He's a fabulous asset to that movie.
And you must be one of the greatest dinner guests in the world. Thanks so much for your time today, Jonathan. I've really enjoyed the stories and particularly enjoyed the analysis of what's going on. The book's called The End of Reality, How Four Billionaires Are Selling a Fantasy Future. You might not be welcome at Peter Thiel's Bolt Hole in central Otago, but I'm sure the bottle's always open at Sam Neill's place just down the road. Thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.